Hey, welcome everybody. I have two announcements to make. I hope you're in the room for the correct session. We had a session switch last week. The web service interop session was cancelled, and this session is about developing Java-based cloud solutions with the Windows Azure plugin for Eclipse. It's also an interop topic, so if you decide to feel free to switch if you want. And the second announcement is that I'm going to do this session in English because there's not much to find on the web about this stuff yet. So since the session is being recorded, we can have the broadest outreach by doing this in English. So I hope this is not a problem for you. I also hope this is not a problem for me as well. Okay. Well, let's start. So actually, this session is about having your coffee in the cloud, right? First of all, let me introduce myself. My name is Bert Erdman. I work for a company called InfoSupport in the Netherlands. I'm a technology manager for a Competence Center Java within InfoSupport, which means I'm responsible for about 30 to 40 Java developers which are active for our customers. Beside that, I'm also still involved in the field myself, so I'm trying to do consultancy jobs. I'm also busy with doing quality assurance on a number of projects. I'm the product owner for our Endeavor Java software factory. So it's all about Java in my day job. And it's also all about Java in my night job and in my weekend job. Because besides my day job, I'm also active for the NLJUG, which is the Netherlands Java User Group, which is a user group of about 3,500 Java developers in the Netherlands. And we're also having conferences, evening sessions, university sessions, stuff like that. Well, our conferences can be compared to Dev Days, for example, and they're a little bit smaller, about 1,200 people. I've been involved with Java professionally since I was doing my internship, so that was about 1995. I ran into one of the first betas of Java, so I've been doing nothing else for the past 16 years, so I know a little bit about Java. And I'm also an author and an editorial board member for the Java magazine in the Netherlands. And Java magazine is published by the same company that also publishes .NET magazine, so it's a small world after all. And for all of the effort that I have been doing with the NLJUG and with Java Outreach in general, I was awarded the Java Champions title a couple of years back. And Java Champion can be compared to the MVP thing in the Microsoft world. Only the MVP thing is for a year, I guess, and Java Champion is for life. Maybe unless I join Microsoft, then it gets probably revoked. But for now, it's still okay. So enough about me. So what are we going to talk about today? First of all, what is the Windows Azure plugin for Eclipse? Then we're going to talk about running Java in Windows Azure, because at the PDC last year, there was an announcement that Java would be a first-class citizen on Azure. So let's see if that's really the case. And if you want to run Java on Azure, we probably have to do some setup. So we're going to talk about constructing a Java runtime, and particularly constructing a Java enterprise runtime in the Azure cloud. And then we're going to see how we can deploy Java EE applications in the Azure clouds, run them, of course. And then, if you want to get things really interesting, we also want to use the Azure services from Java, not only in the cloud, but also on on-premise applications. And then finally, we're going to do a wrap-up with some conclusions as well. So the purpose of this session is mainly to demonstrate how we can run Java in Windows Azure. And we also wanted to do so, we wanted to make things a little bit more difficult. We also wanted to do so using native Java development tooling. So I'm not going to use Visual Studio. I'm going to use Eclipse, which is the about the most popular Java IDE out there. There are a couple of them, but Eclipse is probably the most used one. So I'm going to use Eclipse only, and no Visual Studio for me. Then I also want to leverage my existing Java EE applications. So I'm not going to build applications specific for Azure. I just want to run my my Java application that I have on-premise now. I want to move them to the cloud. So let's see if that's possible. And then, of course, I don't want to craft everything up myself. So I've been scavenging the web for the past few weeks in order to find tooling both commercial and open source, that can help me accomplish these tasks. So let's introduce the plugin first. Actually, there are about two things that I want to introduce here. There's the Windows Azure Starter Kit for Java, which is actually a couple of Apache End extensions on top of the cspec.exe tools that come with the Azure SDK for Windows Azure. The Apache End extensions provide me a way to create a build script in End, which is XML-based, and instruct the cspec.exe tool. So with this toolkit, I can now do some command line stuff in order to package stuff for the Azure cloud. And End has some nice integration with a couple of Java tools, so we have our first level of integration there. A couple of months ago, and maybe even in 2010, I guess, the Windows Azure for the Windows Azure plugin for Eclipse saw the light. And this plugin builds on top of the starter kit with the End extensions, and now makes these extensions available in the Eclipse IDE. So now I will show you in just a minute how to create a Eclipse project that includes all of the stuff in order to package your Java project for the Azure cloud. And the stuff I'm showing you today is based on the latest version of this plugin, which was released a little bit more than a week ago, I guess, which is called the April 2011 CTP. So both of the kits that I showed you on the previous slides rely on the cspec.exe tool. So in order for this stuff to run, you need a Windows-based machine. Right, for a Java developer, that's not that a machine that you use every day. For example, I develop on my Mac. So on a Mac OS X, I cannot use these tools because I need a Windows-based machine. So I'm running a virtual image here, which has Windows in it, so I can use these plugin. But Microsoft is working on bringing it to the Mac and Linux as well. So in order to use this, I created an image. You can use Vista, Windows 7, or Windows Server 2008 for that. You need a .NET framework, 3.5.1 or newer. I'm using 4, I guess. You need the Windows Azure SDK, because you need a CSPEC tool. And if you want to use storage, you need a SQL Express or the Enterprise version of SQL Server. So you can install all these tools manually, or you can use the Microsoft Web Platform installer tool to install them automatically for you. I did the last, which saved me about half a day, I guess. So you want to use the starter kit, we can go to the Codeplex website, which is called the WAS starter kit for java.codeplex.com, and we can just download it, and then we have the package containing the End extensions. If you want to use the Eclipse plugin, you can use the a feature in the Eclipse IDE to install plugins dynamically. So you just type in the URL of the Eclipse plugin. I'll show you all the URL on the last slides of the presentation, so you don't have to write them down. So you go to the plugin website and you automatically download the Windows Azure plugin for Eclipse, and it installs it in the Eclipse IDE, and now you're able to use it. So in my Eclipse IDE, mouse, okay, it's here. In the Eclipse IDE, I can say new project, and then I can go to Windows Azure project, and it creates me a new Windows Azure Eclipse project. So I can give it a name. My first Azure project seemed appropriate. And I can do some basic configuration here at the bottom. So I can, for instance, say if I want to have a worker role, what the VM size should be and how many instances it should run. And I can add more instances and more roles to the project here. So if I'm done configuring it, I can press Finish, and then it will roll out a new Eclipse project, which looks a little bit like this. And what you see here is a structure that hosts the contents of all the workers and other roles that I included into the project. It includes a number of tools as well, and also includes a deploy directory which maps to the local Azure instance running on my machine. So, important stuff is the emulator tooling, which are just command files, and then I can double-click from my IDE in order to start up the Azure emulator, for example, or to reset the emulator, or to run the display emulator UI. I have the worker contents, and we are going to use it a lot because we're going to put all the stuff in there. And then we have a little bit of Azure configuration files as well, and that's where we can configure how many instances we want. We can configure ports and endpoints here, and we can also configure whether we want to build the package for the local emulator or whether we want to build the package for the cloud. So now that we've installed the plugin, we can just start doing the fun stuff. And what we have to do now is construct a Java runtime in Azure. Because here's maybe the first showstopper. Because if you talk about Azure, on Azure, Java is a first-class citizen, then I suspected that there would be a special Java role available or Java VM available. But apparently there is not. So we have to create our own Java worker before we can start hosting Java applications. So from a Java perspective, Azure is just an infrastructure as a service for me. It's just a Windows server running in the cloud. And I can benefit from the high availability and the scaling that Azure offers me, but I don't have a Java runtime. I cannot just start a Java application on this image because there's no Java runtime, there's no virtual machine. So I cannot run anything Java on it yet. So I have to turn it from an infrastructure as a service into a platform as a service. And unfortunately, up until now, I have to do that myself, which gives me a nice puzzle, and well, that's nice to talk about on a conference like this. So we have to ask ourselves what is needed in order to get Java up and running in the cloud. So at first, we need a Java runtime. And there's two Java runtimes available. We can have the JRE, which is the Java runtime environment, which is just a Java virtual machine. And there's the Java Development Kit, the JDK. And the Java Development Kit is also hosting a compiler and all kinds of other stuff. And if I want to run an application server in the cloud, I need the Java Development Kit because some parts of Java EE require runtime compilation. For example, if I have a Java server page, then the Java server page, when you first access it, will be converted into Java code, it will be compiled, and it will be run from memory. So the application server needs access to the compiler as well. If I want to do more advanced stuff than just running command line applications in Azure, I need either a web container, for example, Tomcat or Jetty or one of the other Java web containers available, or I need a full-fledged application server. If I want to run the full power of Java EE in the cloud, I need something like GlassFish or JBoss or WebLogic or WebSphere, and I need to install that as well. And then finally, I need a way to package everything up as an Azure deployment package and run it when the instance gets deployed into the cloud. And this is where we meet the plugin again. So we need to start preparing the runtimes. So first of all, I need to figure out a way to install the Java runtime in the cloud. So that it would be best if I have something like a zip file, for example, and then I can just unzip it and move it into a directory that I can refer to from my application server, for example. Unfortunately, the Java Development Kit does not come with a headless installer. And I'm not able to go to the cloud, start an instance, and then do something like next finish, because there's no user interface attached, so I cannot run the installer. So my workaround for this is the following. I just downloaded the latest Java Development Kit, installed it on my development machine, and then I went to the folder with the installed JDK and just zipped it. And then I moved the zip file into my worker app root. Right, so it's a little bit of a workaround, but it's well the only way to include the Java Development Kit into my Azure package. And once again, I need a JDK and not a JRE, because I need a compiler at runtime. Then I also needed an application server, and I chose the Oracle GlassFish application server because it's an open source and easily available one. And the other reason was just because I'm lazy and the GlassFish application server comes as a zip already, so I don't have to install it and zip it up and do it again. So I just included the installation zip from the Oracle website. So both zip files should be placed within the worker's app root. So I'm including them into my Azure package. So my package gets really big because the Java development kit is about 80 or 85 megabytes. And the application server, well, GlassFish is a relatively small application server. It's only about 80 megabytes, I guess, for the full Java EE server. But as soon as you include like WebSphere or WebLogic, you're including hundreds of megabytes into the package. So another way to get the stuff in the cloud up and running is to not include them in the package, but just download them from a public URL, for example, or from the Azure Blob Store. I'll show you how to do that in a couple of slides. So if I want to package them with my Azure package, I create a folder called Runtime under my app root, and then I move the two zip files into the project. I can just copy them in, right? And I call it Runtime, but you could also call it ABC or whatever, right? It's just a name for your own convenience. The next thing that I need is some sort of an auto-run as soon as my instance gets loaded into the cloud. I need the instance to be prepared to run Java applications. So there's something which is called the startup.command, which is referenced from my Azure configuration file. And within this Azure.command, I could use all my 1989 DOS programming skills to come up with something that unzips stuff, moves it into the right directory, then installs the application server and stuff like that, right? So it took me a little bit of DOS puzzling. Is this readable for everybody? But what you see here is that I'm using some of the scripts that come with the plugin, for example, the unzip.vbs, which is a convenient script for unzipping stuff. So, for example, from my runtime directory, I'm unzipping the JDK zip into the current directory, which is the app root. So it creates a folder over there containing the JDK. And I'm doing exactly the same stuff for the GlassFish application server. Then I'm doing some configuration. I'm setting the Java home to the directory where my JDK is unzipped. And this is so that the application server at runtime can find the JDK and can use the Java compiler from it. And then the final line of this configuration file is just to start up the app server by using the administration client. So I'm firing up the application server from the command line. And the last parameter, verbose, means that it's doing a lot of logging in order to check that everything is running fine. So these packages can get really big. So I already mentioned the alternative of using the Blob Store, for example, or using something like a public URL storage like Amazon S3 or something to download the runtimes from, because it saves you a lot of time. And actually, the Blob Store is probably your best option, because the Blob Store and spinning up images is all being done in the same Azure network. So downloading 80 megabytes from the Blob Store onto another Azure server probably takes about half a second or something like that. Right, so this is probably the fastest way. So in order to get things into the Blob Store, I needed a tool to upload my Java zip files in there. And after some browsing, I found Cerebrata Cloud Storage Studio, and they have a nice online demo. And I could just fire the online demo, connect to my Blob Storage, and it's just running fine, so I don't have to buy the application. But don't tell anybody. So here's the online demo. I use it to connect to my storage for blobs. I created a new container called Java, and within the Java container, you now see some of my GlassFish runtimes and my JDK and my JRE. So I'm including all of the runtimes here. And now I can refer to the runtimes in my startup script, and then I'm downloading them from the Blob Store instead, as I don't have to package them with my installation package. So I need to modify the startup command script a little bit in order for the runtimes to be downloaded from the Blob Store. So I added two more lines of code. So I figured out what the public URL was for my JDK and my GlassFish zip inside of the Blob Store. And there's a nice download script coming with the Eclipse plugin that enables me to start a download and copy the download to the app root directory. And then the zip file is a little bit, well, there's a little change here because I don't get these from the runtime folder anymore, but I get them from the app root itself, and then I unpack them into their own folders. And then I set the Java home and run the application server again. So then finally I have to do one more configuration thing, which is I have to configure some endpoints, or actually I have to configure some ports. Because when I run my application server in the cloud, all of the web requests to the application server should be redirected from the standard port 80 onto Glassfish web container, which is running on port 8080. So I have to map port 80 on my Azure instance onto the Glassfish port 8080. And I can do so using the plugin once again. If I go to the project properties, I have a Windows Azure property in here. And with the Azure wizards that come with it, I can just edit the worker role. And then I can just add another endpoint. And I can map my public port 80 of my instance onto port 8080 of my Glassfish application server. I have to do this for the web port, so that's a definite requirement. But I have to do this for some other ports as well, because the Glassfish application server has a couple of other endpoints that might be of interest. For example, an endpoint where the administration client can be reached, or endpoints that run the JMX containers, or endpoints that that run the debugger. So I have a number of endpoints that I need to configure here. And that's also a first little pain point, because most of the advanced application server have a whole lot of ports that need to be accessible from the outside. And the Azure instance is pretty much confined in what it can open up. I believe there's about 5 endpoints that can be configured in this configuration file. So if you need more, well, that's just bad luck. So you have to strip down your endpoints until you have at maximum 5 endpoints. Okay, so this is also a little bit of a pain point if you want to have a lot of containers listening on different endpoints in the running instance in the cloud. So all of my configuration is now done. So I can just kick off the end scripts, and I can do this by going to the Eclipse project menu, press Build All. And as soon as I press Build All, the deployment directory in my Azure project is being generated by the end script. And it's generating the contents of my worker role completely with the app root over here, containing all of my data and my scripts. And more interestingly, oh, that's not what I wanted to do. There's also a couple of command files over here that enable me to run this stuff into the Azure emulator. Right, so now I can just run it into the local emulator, for example. So if I press the command file over here, I can fire up the local emulator. So it's starting a session with the local emulator. And then if I display the UI for that, I can see the instance coming up. And as soon as run gets called, my startup.command script will be running. And the startup.command script will be downloading stuff from the blob store at first. It will be unzipping stuff. It will be doing some configuration. And then it will start up the application server. So as soon as it's done and the instance is started, we can go to the URL of my local instance, and we can just fire it up, and we see the index XML page of our Glassfish server. So you see localhost 8080 here. This is because I'm running this in the local emulator, so it's running on a localhost alias. But as soon as I package this stuff for the cloud, what we will do later on, we will see a cloud app URL here. So now I configured a Java runtime, I configured an application server, and now we have a full-blown enterprise Java instance that can be run in Windows Azure. Right? So we have to do a couple of things to prepare stuff, but now we have a Java runtime available in Azure. you can call this a first-class citizen, but you have to do something for it. Okay, like I told you, there are a couple of gotchas, because we've kind of upgraded Azure from an infrastructure as a service into a platform as a service, but there are a couple of things that you should be aware of. At first, the Azure VM is pretty much restricted. So I already told you about the endpoints. The maximum number of endpoints is 5. So if you want to have more endpoints, that's just bad luck. The other thing is that most Java EE applications and the Java EE application server are pretty heavy on persistence and on caching and stuff like that. And having state in your Azure instance is a really bad thing, because your instance isn't guaranteed. So the instance that it is running now can just fail or can be taken away from you at any moment. You get a new instance in return. But all of the state which was gathered into the instance that was taken away is gone. So you get pretty bad application server crashes if you have a filled up cache, or if you have like a lot of persistence running into the instance that is not saved in one of the Azure storage types. So if I want to have a Java EE application, a full-fledged Java EE application that is running in my company right now, and I just move it into Azure, and it's using a lot of persistent data, and it's keeping the persistent data into the instance and not into the Azure services for storing data, you will have, well, about a couple of days to up until a week before your application server experiences a very nasty crash. That's probably on a Tuesday morning as Microsoft decide to patch the instance, right? Because the instance will be taken out of the air. You get a new instance in return. Then all of your instance data is gone, so your application server will crash pretty badly. So at the moment, Java EE, heavy persistence-based Java EE apps and Azure are not a perfect fit yet. So I hope Microsoft will come up with something like a Java role in the near future that comes up with a couple of solutions for this types for these type of problems. But for demo purposes, for just running it for a couple of minutes or for a couple of hours, it's okay. And if you don't use a full-fledged Java EE server, but you use something like a web container, or you're just running command line Java applications, then you don't have these problems. So then you're just fine, right? So this conclusion is especially based if you want to run a full-fledged Java EE application server. Okay, so we have a runtime. We can also deploy to the cloud now. We will do that later. But for now, we just want to deploy a Java EE application onto the application server as well. So what do we have to do for that? We can do two things. We can either move an existing application that we already have pre-built. So then we export the existing application into a WAR file or an EAR file, and we can just move it into the package as well. Or we can create a Java application from scratch, and we can do so in an entirely different project than the project that I just showed you, because the Eclipse project that I just showed you should actually be seen as the Windows Azure deployment project. So it's just for deploying, and it's not for developing your application. But either way, I need either a WAR file, a web archive, or an enterprise archive, because that contains the deployable Java EE application. Just like with the runtimes, if I have such an application, I can create another subfolder under the app root, and I include the WAR file. And the WAR file, by the way, is actually just a special zip format as well. So I include it into my project. Then, once again, startup.command needs to be modified, because we now also need to do some configuration for the application, or we need to copy the application to the auto-deploy directory of the application server, and probably we also need to configure the application server as well, because as soon as my instance starts, it will just start a plain vanilla application server, and there's no configuration being done on that server yet. So as soon as we've started the application server, we also need to configure stuff. For example, if I want to use an application that uses a database, for example, I need to create data sources and connection pools within the application server. So I also need to do something in order to get that up and running. So my startup.command gets a little bit more elaborate. We start off with downloading from the blob store, unzipping. The next thing I do is I'm going to copy a JDBC driver, because I'm going to use SQL Azure later on, so I need JDBC driver for that. So I'm copying the JDBC driver into one of the library directories of the GlassFish application server, so that the JDBC driver will become available on the class path of the application server. Then I copy my web application into the auto-deploy directory of GlassFish, which means that GlassFish is constantly scanning this directory, and as soon as a new deployment is being copied into this folder, GlassFish will automatically pick it up and deploy it onto the server. Once again, I set the Java home, and I'm going to start the application server, but I'm going to do a little bit different than the last time, because now I also need to configure the application server. So I'm using an option here that uses a file as a parameter, and this file contains a couple of commands in order to create connection pools and create data sources. And you see the contents of this text file at the bottom of the screen. At first, you see a start domain command, which is starting up the application server. And then you see some commands in order to create a connection pool and to create a JDBC resource, which creates a so-called data source. And the data source can be easily used from my Java EE application. So a little bit of configuration as well. Then once again, I press build all. That will give me a new deploy directory. And I use the emulator tools, start up the emulator, then display the UI to see if everything is running OK. And then I can run my application in the Azure server. So you see, I altered the URL a little bit. So the name you see here, my web app, is the name of the WAR file. So that relates to my deployed web application. And then I'm calling a JSP file here. And I'm doing this on purpose, not because I like this technology so much, but because processing a JSP file means that the contents of the JSP gets converted into Java at runtime. The compiler is being called. It's being compiled into a servlet, and then the dynamic output of the servlet is being processed to the web client, and then it's being shown in HTML. So I've proven with this example that everything is working fine. But it's still running in my local Azure emulator. So still localhost, because it's running in local emulator, and the fact that I'm using a JSP is because I can prove that way that everything is working fine. So the next thing to do is getting everything up and running for the real stuff and deploying it to the production environment, which is the Windows Azure Cloud. So is that difficult? No, it's really easy. I need to go to a file called package.xml, and this file is also, if I go two slides back, you can see this file over here. It's next to the Azure configuration files. Actually, this XML file is my end build script. So this is used to instruct the CSPEC tool. So I need to edit that tool, edit the file. And the only thing I need to do here is change the package type from local into cloud. And now I'm instructing the build tools to not create a deployment directory that can be run in the local emulator, but the effect of building this file is that the deployment folder over here is now containing only two files, which are a configuration file, csconfig, and a Windows Azure package, which is a cspackage file. And these are the two files that can be uploaded into the Azure portal. So how can we do that? Well, we log into the Azure portal. We can go to hosted services, and under our Java hosted service, we can just create a new deployment, and then we can use the browse over here, for example, and we can point it to the cspackage file, and we can point it to a csconfig file in our deploy directory. And then we can press OK here, then it will start uploading. What we could also do is upload these two files into blob storage as well, and then browse the storage. This is probably a faster way of uploading than uploading it directly from your own hard disk into the cloud. OK, Okay, so it's uploading the file, then it will be starting the instance, and then finally we can run the application into the Azure cloud. So if you take a look at this URL now, you can see it's a cloud app URL, so it's actually running in the cloud. I can just give it my own service name. I said myjava.cloudapp.net, and once again I alter the URL to run my web app, and once again the JSP, and that's showing me the same result, so everything is working in the cloud as well. The other thing that you can be seeing from the URL is that it's now running on port 80, not on 8080. GloVis is running on 8080, so my endpoint mapping is working as well, right? So it's redirecting this call to port 80 onto GloVis port 8080. Okay, so what I've showed you up until now is how to get a runtime into Azure, how to run your, well, simple Java application in Azure. And the next thing to do is start using all the fun stuff from Azure itself, because Azure, besides being now a infrastructure as a service or a platform as a service, it also offers me all kinds of other services, like, for example, storage services, access control service, SQL Azure, the service bus, and I want to use those features as well within my Java applications. So from a Java perspective, I can look at Windows Azure and see a couple of services. For example, the storage services, blobs, tables, queues, the SQL Azure, which is kind of a special storage service. And then I see some App Fabric stuff as well, like the access control service for authentication and the service bus in order to route requests to services running at the other end of Azure or services running on-premise. So let's start by accessing the storage services. There's something called the Windows Azure SDK for Java, which can be found at the Windows Azure for J.org website. And this is an API that offers me some Java classes for accessing blobs, tables, and queues. So that's a couple of the services I listed on the previous slide. This is an open source project. It's being run by a French company called Soyatech. It's sponsored by Microsoft. And it's not really up to date with the current version of the Windows Azure SDK, but it's offering you enough of a service to access the basic functionality of blobs, tables, and queues. So the latest release that's available on the web is the November 2010 release, which was about the same time that Microsoft announced Java availability for Azure, and it's compatible with the Azure SDK 1.2. But the current version of the Azure SDK is 1.4.1, I guess. So it's not really on par. Right? And the release pace is also not very promising, because the roadmap doesn't show anything after November 2010. So this is not very good. On the other hand, I've heard some rumors that Microsoft themselves are now busy with building a Java SDK for Azure. So and this will probably be replacing a project like this, and which will probably also take it to the next level and being more compatible with the current version of the Azure SDK. So what can we do with it? Well, for example, we can connect to a queue, just to show you a quick example of how that's done. So here's a small piece of Java code. I can use a couple of classes from the API, for example, a queue storage client, which connects to a URI on which the queue is listening. I can just pass in some configuration information, like, for example, the queue account name and the queue account key. I have to set a retry policy, which means how and how long it's going to try to get something from the queue. And then I'm going to create the queue by saying get queue. And if the queue does not exist, I create it explicitly. And if the queue already exists, I just connect to it by using get queue. So where can we get the credentials? The credentials to access the queue can be found in the Azure Management Portal. So we go to the queue storage, and then in the properties of the queue storage, there's something which is called the primary access key. And if you press the view button over there, it will show you a pretty long string containing something like a key or a password to access the queue. So if we have a queue, we can just start pulling it for messages. So what I did here is I built an Enterprise Java Bean version 3.1, so I could use the new timer scheduler. So what this does is, as soon as this code is being run, the annotation on top of this code is creating an in-memory timer for me that runs every 10 seconds. So every 10 seconds this code is being called. And what this code does is just pulling the queue. So it's trying to do a queue.getMessage, and if a message is found, then message has a value. And if a message is not found, and it will retry for 5 seconds, as I just configured that, if no message is found, message will remain null. I can just check if message is null. If it's not null, I can start processing the message. And if processing goes well, then I can just delete the message from the queue. So it's like a transaction, so to speak. And if message is null, I just ignore it, wait for a couple of seconds, and then the message will be called again. So I have a polling mechanism here. So this is nice for queues, for example. Same thing works also for blob storage. Same thing works for table storage. But what about SQL Azure? What do I need to access SQL Azure? Well, you don't need any special API to access SQL Azure. You can just use the Java JDBC API to access SQL Azure. SQL Azure is just a database. It's a database that's running in the cloud. So you do not need a special API, but you do need a JDBC driver. The JDBC driver can be downloaded from the Microsoft website. Microsoft has their own SQL Server driver. It's probably also on the installation CD of the SQL Server that you already have in place. And if you don't want to use Microsoft's driver, there are also one or two third-party drivers available. So you just have to download the driver and make sure that this driver is available on the class path. Actually, the most tricky thing in order to get this working is to know how to create the connection string. And this took me a couple of hours to figure this out. It's actually, once you know it, it's pretty simple. So I hope you don't run into the same trouble. So I give you away. I'm giving the trick away. So what we have to do in order to get this stuff running, if you just want to run it from a normal Java application, we load the driver in memory. So the SQL Server driver class is the class that contains all the logic to connect to the database. And then we ask the JDBC driver manager for a connection, and we pass in a connection URL here, and this is where the magic happens. And if this driver knows how to handle this URL, it will pass me back a connection object, and then I can just start a query object. So I can create a query and just fire the query to the database and then print the results, for example. So the connection string is comprised of a couple of elements. It starts with JDBC SQL Server, and then you have to know how to build up the rest of the connection string. So what we have to pass in is the name of the SQL Azure server running in the cloud. And we have to add .database.windows.net. And there also have to be a couple of slashes before that. Then you have to point it to the correct database inside of the SQL Azure server. Then we have to give it a username and a password. And what actually took me the most time is to figure out how to pass in the username, because I was passing the username here, which was SQL admin. But then what I didn't know was that it also needed the @ and then the name of the SQL Azure server. So if just passing in SQL admin, it won't run. It gives you like a very fuzzy error message. But once you know that, you also have to include the name of the SQL Azure server. Then it will then it will be running just fine. If you take a look at the resulting string with the correct colons and semicolons in all the right places, then this is the way to connect from a regular Java application to a SQL Azure server running in the cloud. So you don't have to run this code in the cloud as well. You can also run it on your laptop and just connect to the SQL Azure service. In order to connect to a SQL Azure service, you do need to configure a firewall rule in Azure. So you have to go to the Azure Management Portal, and you have to explicitly grant access rights to your machine that is trying to access the SQL Azure server. If you're running it from the cloud, then you don't need to configure this rule because it's running in the same network. So I now know how to connect to queues, blobs, table storage. I know how to connect to the SQL Azure service. What's left is the Azure App Fabric, and specifically the Azure Service Bus. So there's another API that can be used to access App Fabric, which is called the App Fabric SDK for Java Developers, and it can be found at the j.netservices.com URL. This is something that the j.net services exists. I think they're existing about 2 or 3 years now. And what they did was create a Java API to have all of the service bus functionality available, which included TCP relaying and all of the fancy stuff that was in Azure. But halfway 2008, the functionality broke for some reason. Microsoft upgraded the stuff in Azure, and then nobody updated the API anymore. So this stuff is not working. The only way that you can use this now is to do message buffers over the service bus. So the current version has an API to connect to the access control service in order to get access to the App Fabric service bus. And then as soon as you got access, you can use a message buffer communication over the service bus. Right, and you can do communication with .NET services, you can do communication with other Java services doing the same thing in the service bus. The good thing is that this API is fully REST-based, so all the functionality that's not yet in there can be added by just pasting together strings and creating the right REST requests. So if you got a couple of spare rainy Sunday afternoons, you can just add to this library yourself. Unfortunately, all the classes that dealt with TCP relay bindings are no longer available, so they're just removed from the SDK. So if you want to use that or try to fix that, well, you have to look up an older version. I don't know if it's still available, but I don't think that it will be easy to get it running. So code example here as well. How can we use this SDK? We need to create something which is called a message buffer policy. And on the message buffer policy, we have to do some configuration. For example, we want to have authentication. So it's going to the X control service first in order to authenticate this client. And then only then are we allowed to use the service bus. We can also supply whether we want to use transport security or not, which means it's either going to be over HTTP or over HTTPS, choosing SSL for transport security. Then we can set a maximum purge time for messages to live in the service buffer. I set it to 20 minutes here, but I just learned that the default timeout is 5 minutes. So anything longer than 5 minutes doesn't hold. So after 5 minutes, your message buffer message is deleted anyway by Azure. So there's not much use of putting this to 20 minutes. And then the last parameter here in the call is the maximum number of messages that can be held in the service buffer. And I set it to 100, but it could also be 1,000 or 10 or whatever. So authentication is required, so I need to supply some credentials. There are some utility classes in the SDK that allow me to create a new credential set. It's based on a shared secret token, so I have to include an issuer name and an issuer key. And once again, the issuer name and the issuer key can be found in the Windows Azure portal. So I, within the portal, I navigate to the service bus part, and then on the service bus, I can go to the properties tab, and then I can look up the issuer key. I believe I have a screenshot of it as well. Yeah, see. So it's called management keys. If you press the view button, it will show you a couple of keys that can be used in order to access the service bus. Then finally, I have to create a message buffer. So I pass in the credentials. I pass in some namespace and a request buffer name, and then I can create the buffer itself. So this is the client side, for example. If I have something else, also want to communicate with the service bus, then they can then I have to do the same. So it's a bit strange because create actually means create something from nothing, but this also works if the buffer already exists. So if it exists, it just connect to it. If it doesn't exist, it will create the buffer. I have no separate methods to figure out whether it already exists or not. The next example is how to pull a message from the buffer. Well, code looks a bit little bit familiar because it resembles the Q code a lot. So once again, I use a timer here. So every 10 seconds, this message will be called. And then it will call the method retrieve message on the bus. So it will pass in the request buffer name. And it will, and I need to pass in another argument, 5, which is the amount of seconds it will retry. So it will retry for 5 seconds to get a message. If a message is found, it will be put into the string message here. If no message is found, it will give me an exception. So I need to do exception handling here. So that's a little bit different than the SDK that does the queue access, because if no message was found in the queue, it will just return null. But if no message is found in the message buffer, it will give me an exception. All right, so you have to be aware of that. So now we know how to access all of the Azure services as well. So we can either use it within our Java application that runs into the cloud, or we can use these SDKs on a machine that is running on-premise and is connecting to the Azure services running in the cloud, and they can start communicating with each other or with Windows applications. So it's also a nice way to do interop as well. So that leads us to the wrap-up. Some conclusions. Well, I found that deployment in Azure is very time-consuming. That has nothing to do with Java. It's just slow in general. If I compare it to my experience on other PaaS platforms, then some of these platforms lead you from compiling to production within under a minute. And with Azure, even in the local emulator, it takes you about 5 to 10 minutes to get everything up and running, especially if you need to download stuff from over the internet. You need to unzip it, you need to copy and move it. This is a little bit slow. And uploading stuff into the management portal is really, really slow, which takes you about 20 minutes to get stuff up and running. So that's a real time waster, but that's actually nothing to do with Java, just one of my conclusions of playing around with it. Well, as we've seen, the Java SDKs to access Azure services are not really on par with the actual version of the service running in Windows Azure. So this is something that you need to be aware of. So some of the advanced and new functionality which is available in Windows Azure is probably not accessible from the Java SDKs that are available. The good thing, however, is both of the SDKs that I show you are open source, so you can also download the source. And since all of the Azure services are accessible by using REST calls, you can start fiddling around by parsing strings together and maybe build on top of the SDK to get a new functionality running. What can be done with the current state of Windows Azure and the current state of the plugins and the SDKs is to get simple standalone Java applications up and running in Azure. It's also possible to it's perfectly possible to run a web application based on Tomcat or Jetty in Azure. And you could argue whether it's a good thing to run a full Java application server in Azure, because it will probably give you some problems, problems that are not really easy to solve, which have to do with, well, the constrained number of endpoints that you can configure, and the fact that the application server probably needs a lot of persistence mechanisms, so it's going to put a lot of state into the instance, and which is a really bad thing from an Azure standpoint. So there are a couple of solutions. Either Microsoft creates like a special Java aware instance, or maybe a predefined worker role containing, for example, a pre-configured app server, something like that. Or you have to completely rebuild your Java EE application so that all of the stores that are needed by either the application server or your applications are getting remapped onto the storage services from Azure itself. So for example, if you need to do persistence, you're doing persistence in SQL Azure, or you're going to do persistence in the table storage. You're not going to do persistence in like hash tables on disk, or like other databases that run inside of the application server. So for running complete Java enterprise application servers in the cloud, it's nice for demos, for just running it for a couple of minutes, but it's for real life, it's just an interop bridge too far right now. And hopefully this will change in the near future. But if you're fine running it on a Tomcat instance, for example, so if you're not using Enterprise Java Beans and stuff like that, but you do want to use dynamic web stuff, then it can be okay to take it into production with Tomcat. So a couple of links to resources here. All of the starter kits, plugins, and SDKs. If you look around at the URLs, there are also some code samples, documentation available there. So that brings me to the questions part. Anybody have any questions? Well, I can show you the project. We have some time left, so I can show you the project as well. So, let me see. I have a project over here. So here's the startup command file, right? So it comes in the util folder that is being generated by the Eclipse plugin. This startup command can then be edited. Open it up over here. How does it connect? Okay, it connects to the automatic startup because of the configuration, which is in one of the Azure configuration files. I always have to guess which one it is. Open with text editor. This is the one. So this is the configuration file that comes with the Azure package, and as soon as Azure is processing this configuration, it sees a task over here that says run the startup command and give it an elevated execution context. So we can just copy files around in the Azure instance. So this is the link to the startup command. Yeah. There's also another way to execute stuff at startup. And you have to write a program in C Sharp, I guess, a program which has a couple of methods that get called with all the state changes of the virtual machine. So when it's initializing, when it's running, when it's preparing, when it's starting up, stuff like that. So that's another way to do it. Yeah, you are. Yeah. But the thing that you can do with the C Sharp one is that you can write code that is being repeated every 10 seconds or so, because you are in control of the different phases of the Azure instance. And with the way of running the startup command, it will run as something like an autoexecute.bat if you want at startup of the machine, and then afterwards it won't run at all. Right, so that's the difference. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.